The Rust Belt is rising, according to some.
It's been a depressed area for a long time, but that's about to change.
A hazardous waste incinerator, a company that stores metals, and a future petrochemical plant. They all bring pollution and opportunities some say they can't afford to pass on.
The thing is, when you get to small river towns like East Liverpool, every job is important. We can't pick and choose a lot of times.
I'm Carol Holsapel. This week on the Allegheny Front, a special look at East Liverpool, Ohio.
There's a lot of people my age in their 40s and 50s in the area that are dying from cancer.
A town trying to balance clean air and the health of its population with economic survival. Stay with us. The petrochemical industry is promising economic development in many Rust Belt towns where it's sorely needed. But many are wary of the pollution that this new chemical boom will bring. In part one of our series about communities bearing the brunt of pollution, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant takes a look at East Liverpool, Ohio, a town that's welcoming this new industry while still dealing with pollution from facilities that have been there for decades.
East Liverpool could be considered beautiful, sitting along the Ohio River with a view of the foothills. It's just north of the West Virginia panhandle at the Ohio-Pennsylvania border. But it's faced years of hard times. You might remember a devastating photo in 2016, two people passed out in a car from a heroin overdose with a four-year-old looking on from the back seat. That was East Liverpool.
East Liverpool has been ravaged by the drug issues, and there is no work.
Amanda Kiger is a community activist with children and grandchildren in East Liverpool. Unemployment rates in the city are higher than the state as a whole. The percentage of people in poverty and living with disabilities is also higher.
Our city is so poor that our school system, everybody gets free lunch. You do not even have to do an application in East Liverpool schools anymore.
East Liverpool was once considered the pottery capital of the nation. Kiger drives me past the Hull China factory, where she sold lunches as a teenager.
You see that there's very little people that actually work there now.
I couldn't tell if it was open or not.
It's barely open.
The coal industry that flourished here for a while is also on its way out. In recent decades, the city is probably best known for its hazardous waste incinerator, one of the world's largest, formerly called WTI and now known as Heritage Thermal Services.
This is actually Heritage right here. This is WTI. And you see, like, it's literally housed in the neighborhood here.
We're just a few hundred feet from homes in a low-income neighborhood. There's a low smokestack and a loading area for waste. Everything from medical waste to nail polish to waste from government Superfund sites is burned inside. Many people remember July 13, 2013, the day the incinerator released nearly 800 pounds of potentially hazardous ash into the air. It included arsenic and manganese.
And it covered the whole East End area with ash.
As part of her job, Kiger gathers stories of people experiencing environmental problems here.
We had a girl, and she's now moved away. She said, you know, they getting in the car, we're going to leave for, I believe it was a doctor's appointment. She said, we hear a boom, and all of a sudden my son, my mother, my car, my house, just covered in ash.
So we're going to take a moment and we're going to collect the index cards.
It's been about 5 years since that incident, and in mid-November, the U.S. Department of Justice and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency held a joint meeting at the East Liverpool City Hall about a consent decree they'd reached with Heritage. In the proposal, Heritage Thermal President Chris Fearson says they've agreed to pay a $600,000 penalty. Just under half of that would go to the federal government.
And we are excited to be able to spend the majority of the money for the penalty, over $300,000 here locally in the community of East Liverpool for lead abatement projects.
Fearson says the money will be used to fix lead water lines and lead paint in homes within 25 miles of the plant. And he says the incinerator is no longer accepting the kind of waste that caused the incident. But city resident Thomas Redmond's not convinced. He told regulators he's worried about his three kids.
Since WTI or Heritage, whoever, however you want to call them, moved in East End, I mean, there has been a lot more issues with cancer and stuff like that.
EPA attorney John Mattson says the government has no proof of that.
EPA does not have any evidence of any health effects that the people are suffering. If anybody has anything like that, you can submit it to us at any point in time, but I am not aware of anything.
EPA engineer Linda Rosen encouraged people at the hearing to call in complaints.
I think I've only received one complaint from the facility.
Well, that's because nobody has jobs here.
Mitzi Stoddard, a resident here, thinks people are scared to complain because of the 180 jobs at the incinerator.
Yeah. A lot of these people won't say nothing because that's the only way they're feeding their family.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, we might die in 20 years, but I'm going to feed my kid today.
Sure.
Even though the Heritage Incinerator has signed multiple consent decrees with the government after pollution violations through the years, Tom Redman, like many others here, thinks city leaders and regulators are failing them.
I mean, I understand East Liverpool. I understand we're kind of in a rut, and we kind of need all the help possible for jobs and stuff like that. But, I mean, don't you guys think you guys are supposed to be protecting us?
And as we'll hear later, for many families, government action has come too late, and the damage from air pollution has already been done. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple with Julie Grant. We're talking about East Liverpool, an industrial town along the Ohio River, just over the border from Pennsylvania. It's part one of our series looking at how pollution in our region is impacting people's health and what's being done about it. So, Julie, it sounds like there's a long history of pollution in East Liverpool.
Yeah, opposition to the incinerator started even before it was built. As incoming vice president in 1992, Al Gore kind of famously promised to prevent the incinerator from opening, saying it was, quote, unbelievable that a plant that burns hazardous waste would be located in a floodplain like this. And then a few months after Clinton and Gore were sworn in, the incinerator was permitted to open.
Do we know if there have been documented health impacts from the incinerator?
Well, in the early 1990s, the Ohio Department of Health found a significantly higher rate of cancer deaths in East Liverpool than the rest of the surrounding county, the state, or even the country. But that was so soon after the incinerator had opened, the state attributed the high rate to high smoking rates rather than pollution from the plant. That was about 25 years ago, and there hasn't been a study focused on cancer rates specifically in East Liverpool since then. And as I mentioned before, the US EPA says it has no evidence of health effects from the incinerator.
Still, East Liverpool has had high pollution levels that at least one researcher connected to health impacts in the community.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, in 2010, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, that's a federal agency, found that the levels of the heavy metal manganese in the air in East Liverpool were a public health hazard. This finding was based on monitoring by the Ohio EPA at three different sites in East Liverpool from the year 2000 to 2009. The monitor at the East End Elementary School found elevated levels of airborne manganese, and another of the air monitors, one right near a metal processing facility, found levels more than 34 times what would cause health problems. The Ohio EPA said in their report it couldn't find a higher amount of airborne manganese in the country.
And that facility is owned by Pittsburgh-based SH Bell, and it stores metals like manganese to be processed into things like batteries and stainless steel by other companies.
That's right.
So one source of manganese has been dust coming from SH Bell's facility.
Yeah. When I was driving around East Liverpool with activist Amanda Kiger, she stopped in the neighborhood that's only a few hundred feet from SH Bell, and you could see on the sides of the houses that face the facility, there's a brown staining. Kiger says that's manganese.
And you'll see, like, across that roof back there, you'll see rust-colored up there. You'll see across the front of here. See how that is?
So our bodies need manganese for bone health, for metabolizing fat and carbohydrates. It's in healthy foods like leafy greens and nuts. We can excrete what we don't need, but it's different when you breathe it in. Last year, I spoke with Erin Haynes, an environmental epidemiologist at the University of Cincinnati, and she says when people breathe in airborne manganese, it can be toxic.
Through the nose, through the lungs, through the respiratory system, manganese particles can travel directly through the olfactory nerve and enter directly into the brain.
So too much manganese can be a neurotoxin like lead. Manganese has been known to cause tremors and loss of coordination and balance in people, and to affect memory and the brain's ability to function.
Right. So a couple of years after the state found such high manganese levels in East Liverpool, the city's school district started noticing something. High rates of students qualifying for special education services. 19% in East Liverpool compared with 13% statewide.
And that's why Erin Haynes and her team started testing kids in the area to see if there was a connection with the airborne manganese. They tested 100 kids ages 7 through 9 for levels of manganese in their bodies and for their IQ score, and they found a connection.
We did see an association between the level of manganese in the child's body and then lower IQ scores. So the higher the concentration within the child, the lower the IQ.
So, Julie, what was it like for families going through this testing?
Well, I did talk with some of them. I met with Eileen Herduck and her daughter Jessica, who at the time was getting ready to start high school at Connie's Corner. It's a diner in Chester, just a few miles from East Liverpool.
She just got, what'd you get?
A pancake with strawberries and hash browns.
Both parents work full-time, and they run a small farm, cows, pigs, and chickens.
She lives on a farm, and she hates eggs.
When Eileen Herduck heard about the manganese study, she wanted her daughter tested.
There's a lot of people my age in their 40s and 50s in the area that are dying from cancer. So whenever I first heard that, it was important to me just to get her into it so I could see what everything was doing in the area. Because, I mean, we're out by the power plants in Pennsylvania there in Shippingport, but we're here all the time too. So just the whole area here, it was important for me to see what it would affect her.
About 3 or 4 years ago, Jessica went through a round of testing to see how much manganese is in her body and to determine her IQ. They cut pieces of her hair, took blood samples, clipped her toenails, and they wanted her saliva.
You had to like spit in this little jar and fill it up just so far. It was really weird. It took a long time.
Get enough saliva.
Yeah.
Then there was the IQ portion.
You had to do this math question thing. It was time. You had to see how many problems you could done in 15 minutes, and then they did like a spelling test thing, and then a whole bunch of questions of like my normal foods and stuff that I ate.
Jessica didn't think the test was too bad. Plus, she got to spend the $50 the researchers paid participants. Her family waited a few months, and then an envelope came with the results.
Some of the things were up higher than normal.
Eileen Herduck says while the elevated level of manganese in her daughter's body was worrisome, they haven't seen evidence of any learning disability.
But I know it didn't affect her. She's in the honor society and she's getting A's, and her plans are to go on to be a vet. So that's going to be 8+ years of schooling.
The researchers did another round of testing with the same kids this past summer, now that they're teenagers. Jessica took part in that one too. The results have not been publicly released.
So this family lives in a community outside of East Liverpool. What about some of the children who live closer to these industrial facilities?
One parent I spoke with, Tracy Lamb, is raising her children in the neighborhood that's kind of sandwiched between S.H. Bell and the Heritage Thermal Waste Incinerator. She's disabled and on Social Security. She's a homemaker and her husband is unemployed. Lamb grew up around East Liverpool. She says some of her kids were part of the manganese study, and when she first opened the results...
I just remember reading it, great anticipation and worry, and when I saw their results and a lot of the levels that had been raised and stuff, even higher than kids that live next to a manganese-producing plant in Mexico, they're testing higher than these kids. It was frightening. I mean, it was terrifying. And then you think in your head, okay, what do I do? Because if you go to a pediatrician with these results, they don't know what to do. I mean, there's no, like, medical precedence for testing kids for manganese and these other things. And so it's like, what do you even do? I mean, I was interested in it for a while. I looked it up. I Googled it, the effects, causes. You're just up against the wall as to what you can even do other than move. I'm not sure. I think about it all the time. I'd love to move, but it's crisis right now. It's just not a possibility for us. You worry and you wonder why, and then you feel powerless.
That was Tracy Lamb of East Liverpool, and she's not alone. There's been disappointment by others since the first round of testing results were made public.
We had showed that, you know, we have, for one, we had the highest manganese levels ever recorded in the United States. And then we proved that the high manganese levels in the children in that area was causing development hardships, was literally making them lose IQ points.
That's community activist Amanda Kiger again. She says local, state, and federal officials all saw the study results. In early 2018, the U.S. EPA did take action to get S.H. Bell to reduce the amount of manganese in the air. The agency and S.H. Bell signed a consent decree. In an email to the Allegheny Front, the company denied wrongdoing and said it was already doing what it agreed to in the EPA settlement. East Liverpool Mayor Ryan Stovall, though, was pleased.
And I'm glad to see the EPA did step in to help out and try to at least make some accountability to S.H. Bell.
But he says you can't drive out industries just because of pollution.
The thing is, when you get to small river towns like East Liverpool, every job is important. You know, we can't pick and choose a lot of times.
And many people in the town are hoping that East Liverpool is actually on the economic upswing and new jobs will be coming. But others fear more pollution. That's up next. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
You're listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. East Liverpool, Ohio, just over the border from Pennsylvania, sits right between where two new industrial plants are in the works. Shell Chemical is building its $6 billion ethane cracker about 16 miles upriver in Pennsylvania. And now a second cracker is proposed for southeastern Ohio. In part one of our series looking at communities impacted by pollution, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant continues her look at the tension between jobs and a healthy environment for East Liverpool residents, where many hope the cracker plants will bring renewed life to this struggling industrial town.
Larry Heck is excited about all the new business he sees coming to southern Columbiana County.
Oh, it's very, very well needed. It's been a depressed area for a long time, but that's about to change.
Heck runs Pier 48, which imports commodities on barges sent from the Gulf Coast up the Mississippi into the Ohio River, a few miles from East Liverpool. A huge overhead crane moves heavy cargo off river barges, commodities like soybeans from China. Today, it's picking up huge steel coils.
They weigh about 56 to 58,000 pounds each.
The slow-moving conveyor transfers them from the barge and carefully places them on the ground.
And they're going to a local steel mill up in Youngstown.
Heck says most of that steel will be used for natural gas pipelines. He says imports are on the rise, like the mineral barite used in natural gas drilling. The gas wells here will also feed the new ethane crackers in the region to produce plastic pellets. Penny Trina says that's going to be the game changer.
Once that plant gets up and running, we'll see a lot of offshoots of different plastics industries, I believe, all up and down the Ohio River.
Trina is CEO of the Columbiana County Port Authority, which has invested $14 million in Pier 48. She says location is everything.
So we're on the river. We're geographically blessed to be in between those two proposed cracker plants.
Trina expects that will bring even more spin-off industries as a result. She says it's the biggest growth industry since the steel mills.
Yeah. I would say since the 70s, 78, 75, I don't think that we have seen an uptick of economic development like this.
86-year-old Richard Wolf has heard this story before. He's been a member of the East Liverpool School Board for decades and has been an activist against the hazardous waste incinerator.
We were told that this facility would be the catalyst for economic growth, and none of that ever happened.
Richard Wolf says of his 8 children, 6 had to leave to find jobs in their fields. But he says his sister left after that toxic ash release from the waste incinerator 5 years ago. It saturated her neighborhood.
We don't know how many people have fled because of fear of what might be in the way of a toxic atmosphere, polluted environment.
Wolf laments that the community has not protected children from the effects of pollution like manganese, and he worries that the new ethane crackers and the plastics production will create more of the same.
If you go out there, we have blue cards for anybody who would like to testify.
This is another public hearing held by the Ohio EPA at a high school auditorium in Shadyside, a town in southeastern Ohio where an Asian company, PTTGCA, has proposed a $10 billion ethane cracker. It's promising 6,000 initial construction jobs and 500 permanent jobs. About 100 citizens showed up, many to officially comment on Ohio's draft air permit for the plant. The state estimates it would emit nearly 2 million tons of greenhouse gases a year, as well as hundreds of tons of volatile organic compounds, particulate matter, and other pollutants. Ohio EPA spokesperson Heidi Grismer says the cracker will not be allowed to push the region's air quality below federal standards.
The state, our mission is to protect all Ohioans, no matter where they live, and to ensure that there is good air quality for all Ohioans.
But for East Liverpool residents like Amanda Kiger, who've listened to regulators discuss the latest air violations at the hazardous waste incinerator, the parents waiting for the next round of results to find out how manganese is impacting their children's ability to learn, and those who've watched polluting industries come and go, it's hard for them to believe the community's health is getting much consideration compared with the excitement about jobs and economic growth from the gas industry.
Yeah, we're going to have money. We're going to have more sickness. And when all of that's done and that starts rotating out like those type of extractive industries do, we're just going to be left once again poor, sick. That's what our community is going to be left with.
So for better or worse, East Liverpool, like much of the Ohio Valley, is anxiously awaiting the coming chemical boom. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
As we heard in Julie Grant's reporting, the consequences of manganese exposure for kids in East Liverpool are scary. There's a link between high levels of manganese and lower IQ. It's similar to lead. There's no safe level of lead in the blood for kids. We know kids are exposed to lead through water and lead paint in older homes and even in schools. Elevated lead levels in blood have been associated with nervous system damage and lower IQ. I talked with Dr. Carla Campbell from the Department of Public Health Sciences at the University of Texas at El Paso about how to communicate the very real, life-altering risks of toxic exposure. Before teaching public health, she worked for years with children and families impacted by lead in Philadelphia.
How can we talk about toxic environmental exposures without stigmatizing the people who have been affected?
Yeah, I mean, I always found when I used to see lead poisoned children in the lead poisoning clinic at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, I saw many children there. And when I spoke to parents, I would tell them that their children are at risk for developing a number of possible problems, such as the lower IQ or the behavioral or developmental problems. But I told them they're at risk for it. So that doesn't mean that they definitively will get any of these problems. But they're at risk for it, and that's why we're concerned. And that's the way I would explain why we were following the children in clinic and taking blood lead levels and, you know, concerned about it. The other side of the coin is encouraging parents to give their children as stimulating an environment as possible. And with lead, I think there have been some studies that have shown that children tend to do better even if they've been exposed to lead with that type of stimulating environment. So parents really helping kids even from an early age just have an environment where you're talking to children, you're giving them new information, you're engaged with the children. Some of our families wouldn't necessarily be doing that all the time without a little bit of coaching and encouraging.
So being a little more, giving the families something proactive that they can do.
Yes. And, you know, I don't think lead poisoning is not a death sentence. So, you know, giving families hope that you'd like to figure out what the source of lead is and reduce or prevent further exposure. But, you know, I think giving the parents hope that these kids have plenty of potential is important. I don't think these parents really felt a stigma. What I saw was just a concern for doing the best, you know, under the circumstances. Let's try to move forward and do the best with what we can.
Did you find it difficult talking with them about it?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, frustrating with the landlords, you know, getting them to do what needed to be done. Most of the children we dealt with were in rental properties, so the parents had less control over the property. It is a very difficult situation for parents, you know, particularly if you think about fracking and a family owning a property and then finding out that they're getting poisoned on their property and what do they do? And, you know, it's quite a dilemma. Eventually, the city developed a lead court, and I was on the team of people that was helping to create the lead court, where the landlords, if they weren't responding to the city's orders to get rid of the lead hazards in a child's home, they were hauled into court to explain to the judge why they weren't doing the work, and with the potential to be fined as well.
When it comes to lead, you know, there were some crusading doctors, researchers who kind of raised the alarm. Is that model applicable to other types of pollution that kids are exposed to, like ambient air pollution?
Yeah, I think, right. There were researchers, Herb Needleman was one, and a lot of action, I think, on the public health front. With the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finally getting on board. So I think that could be a model for other exposures. But I think it's also important that the public, particularly the public affected, for instance, people affected by fracking, let's say, in a certain community, I think it's important for them to come out and be vocal as well. You know, sometimes that's done through environmental justice groups that spring up that provide a more organized way to deal with a problem. For instance, with Love Canal, way back in the 80s, I believe it was, there was a group that sprung up to work on decreasing the exposure and bringing it to the Carter administration. So I think there is a role for grassroots groups as well as the experts, you know, that can speak out.
Dr. Carla Campbell teaches in the Department of Public Health Sciences at the University of Texas at El Paso. Our conversation and all of the stories you just heard about East Liverpool, Ohio, are part of a series about environmental health. And you can find more at AlleghenyFront.org. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holzapfel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation.